It's 12:06 and 74 degrees in Santa Fe as At Noon continues from KSFR News on Monday, June 3rd. Coming at this hour, questions arise whether Governor Martinez is the focus of an FBI investigation over the contract for the Downs Racino in Albuquerque. How much money could New Mexico save in prison costs each year if the high school graduation rate were to improve? Some say tens of millions. And we'll look back at New Mexico history to a raid on the courthouse in Tierra Amarillo County. The event is being remembered this week. I'm Bill Dupuy, back with those stories, 60 Seconds with Christopher Hagen, and more after headlines.
The U.S. Supreme Court has today ruled that DNA collection from anyone arrested for a felony is a legal practice. Though the case put before the justices came via a legal challenge from Maryland, it has its origins in New Mexico. In 2011, Governor Susana Martinez fought for expansion of our state's Cady's Law, seeking routine DNA testing of any felony suspect, as it could be an aid in solving other assault and murder cases. Back in January, President Obama signed a federal version of the law, sponsored by New Mexico Senator Tom Udall and the now-retired Jeff Bingaman. Governor Martinez had filed a brief with the Supreme Court in February, arguing that the law was constitutional. A 5-4 majority agreed. The latest report has the Thompson Fire in the Jemez now just above 1,900 acres. Some 310 personnel have been working to create fire lines around portions of the perimeter, and the most recent report says that they've achieved 5% containment. The fire, which started Friday, is believed to have been caused by a downed power line. That's the same ignition source cited for the Tres Lagunas fire near Pecos, which has now scorched 8,000 acres. Over 600 firefighters are on that scene, again with 5% containment. Plans are afoot for the Santa Fe School Board to file a lawsuit against the state for not providing what they call adequate funding for education. The school board has budgeted $100,000 for legal fees in the coming year, and the Journal North reports that they're looking for other school districts to join in on the lawsuit. Similar suits have been filed in other states, and some of them have been successful. A number of cities around New Mexico will this week take up the issue of restricting the public's use of fireworks in the face of extreme fire conditions statewide. Santa Fe City Council approved restrictions last week. Both Albuquerque and Las Cruces take up the matter today, with Farmington to follow suit tomorrow. A 1999 state law prohibits cities and municipalities from enacting an outright ban on all fireworks. A legislative attempt to undo much of that law failed in the most recent session of lawmakers. The endangered silvery minnow may get a drink of water after all. The Albuquerque Bernalillo Water Authority says it will lease 40,000 acre-feet of water to the federal government at a cost of $4 million. The water will be channeled as needed into the Rio Grande. It comes from the Water Authority's allotment provided by the San Juan Chama Project. It's stored in an Abiquiú reservoir. The story of hacked emails sent and received by the Martinez administration continues to unfold. Last week, a former campaign manager for the Republican governor was indicted on federal charges of commandeering the access to emails on the governor's 2010 election website. Now, the governor's former finance director confirms that she was interviewed by the FBI about emails related to a controversial decision about the contract to run the Downs Racino in Albuquerque. A weekend standoff between a Santa Fe man and the police SWAT team has ended peacefully with the man in jail. Officers responded to a domestic disturbance call late Saturday to find an armed 46-year-old man refusing to leave his house after allegedly battering his wife. The standoff ended when the SWAT team fired tear gas into the house, forcing the man out. Elliver Kessler, the Santa Fe man also known as El Dentista, is scheduled for arraignment today on multiple counts including practicing dentistry without a license and possession of dangerous drugs. The unlicensed Kessler was performing dental work on folks out of his small red Chevrolet sedan. His business cards were in Spanish and offered several services such as teeth cleanings, fillings, extractions, and crowns. He was arrested back in April in an undercover sting operation and has been held without bond in the Santa Fe County Jail. New Mexico's Sunday liquor sales law will change in less than 2 weeks. Beginning June 14th, it will be legal for restaurants and bars to sell alcohol at 11 a.m. instead of noon. 12 o'clock, however, will remain the time when alcohol can be sold in retail stores. New Mexico Senator Tom Udall is among many posting notice of condolences today on the passing of New Jersey Democratic Senator Frank Lautenberg. The 89-year-old World War II vet died today of viral pneumonia. Udall notes that he worked with his Senate colleague to make good progress on issues of public health and the environment. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie will appoint a replacement, very likely to be a Republican. That would narrow the Democrats' Senate majority to just 52. And weather for Santa Fe. Mostly sunny and warm today and Tuesday, with highs in the low 80s. Look for overnight lows in the mid-50s. For KSFR News, this is Dan Garrity.
Stocks are mixed on Wall Street. The NASDAQ is down, the S&P 500 up, the Dow Jones up 68 points at 15,183. 12:12 and a half on at noon from KSFR News. A question at the Roundhouse today is whether the FBI is conducting an investigation of alleged favoritism by Governor Martinez in awarding the contract to run the Downs Racino in Albuquerque. News stories have emerged most recently in the Santa Fe Reporter over emails being uncovered that raised that very question. But the governor has said that neither she nor any member of her staff have been approached by the FBI on the subject. Now comes an admission from a former Martinez fundraiser that indeed the FBI has been asking questions, at least of her, about the Racino. Andrea Goff released a weekend statement that she was asked questions about the Racino by agents, and Governor Martinez spoke briefly with KOB Television over the weekend about Goff's admission of being interviewed by the FBI.
I don't know what her, you know, what exactly the FBI told her. I will tell you that the FBI is not forthcoming in reference to whether or not they're investigating the emails. It's our understanding that the FBI has said there is no Downs investigation whatsoever.
As we said, the Santa Fe Reporter first broke the news that the FBI was talking with Martinez staff members and others about the FBI. A University of Chicago economist reports that a slight increase in New Mexico's high school graduation rate would have a huge impact on incarceration costs. The former state education secretary is Veronica Garcia. She's now head of the advocacy group New Mexico Voices for Children, and I asked her about that study.
James Heckman, who is a noted economist and has done a lot of work in looking at the cost benefits of various components of education, has looked at what would happen if 5% of just male graduates, we had an increase in New Mexico, and what that savings would be in the juvenile justice system and in incarceration. And it would save the state of New Mexico about $38 million annually. It doesn't also account for the fact that high school graduates, if we increased just the males by 5%, we would see an increase in their income and in terms of what circulates through the economy, an additional $20 million coming into the state in terms of revenue and so on, in terms of earning income. When you think of what that means in terms of quality of life for all of us, it's just astounding.
We know that New Mexico comes out every year with a poor high school graduation rate. Where do we stand now?
And we're waiting for the latest kids count report to come out. But typically, we're around 60-65%. I don't take that number to the bank because I don't have the latest figures for how we compare nationally. But we're in that 60-65% range. We know that in New Mexico, roughly, we lose roughly 40% of our kids that don't graduate in 4 years. When we look at what those costs are, and that's just looking at incarceration, if you were to look at, let's talk about young women and teen pregnancy and that cost, or the costs that accumulate, you know, from drug use and, you know, all of the other kinds of social ills that come with not graduating from high school. Even health, folks that do not graduate from high school, it impacts their longevity, believe it or not, in terms of, you know, alcoholism and other, you know, drug use and other kinds of issues that impact them. And so graduating from high school is so important in so many ways, but it impacts the economy in a significant way as well.
How can the graduation rate be improved?
Well, you know, there's never one silver bullet, but there's multiple things that we can do, and I think that we are on the right path. You know, one obviously is early intervention. From the brain science, we know that even that first year of life makes a tremendous difference. So home visitation programs, quality child care, pre-K, K-3 plus, extended time so that kids have a good start and are reading by third grade. On the tail end of it, making high school more relevant and rigorous, the relationships are very important at high school in terms of keeping kids in school. The high school redesign that we started back when I was Secretary of Education that required students to either take an AP class or an online class or a dual credit course seems to be paying off. More kids seem to be taking advantage of that and are more likely to graduate. So I think we're on the right path, but I don't think that there's any one silver bullet that we just did this one thing. On the other hand, we do know that early intervention makes a huge difference, and if children are reading by third grade, they're more likely to graduate from high school. So I would say if we had to put our focus in one place, really early intervention is the key.
Now we're reading about a growing trend in online learning. How effective can that be?
We have found it to be effective at the high school level in ensuring that more kids are, you know, earning their credits. I think that we have to recognize that this is a different age and time from, you know, my generation of when we were in school. Children are, and young people are, more comfortable with technology. It is self-paced. It lends itself to our societal needs. If people have to work during the day, or they happen to be night owls, or they can only take a course, get up early and take their class from 5 to 6 in the morning and then go to work. I mean, it gives them that flexibility. And I think that we have to use all of the tools available to ensure that we make college graduation and high school graduation more accessible. The human interaction is obviously important, but also is individualization and self-pacing. There's some very effective online coursework and very effective online teaching. And so I think we need to utilize all the tools available to us to ensure that we have a more educated citizenry in our state. And we all benefit from it, from the cost savings, but also decreases in crime, just a better quality of life, as I like to say, for all New Mexicans.
But do young people have the self-discipline to really take advantage of online learning?
It requires self-discipline, but I think it's balanced with self-pacing and individual need. And I think that we're moving away from the concept of the Carnegie Unit. And I don't know if you or your listeners know what is meant by the Carnegie Unit, but for those that when you're in high school, a unit of time, like a Carnegie Unit, and we know that seat time does not necessarily equate to quality learning, right? We know that many of us maybe took courses that we weren't that crazy about, but we sat in that seat for X amount of time. And so what really is important is, have you learned the material and can you demonstrate that you have mastered that material? And there are ways that I think we can measure effectively, you know, how students are doing, and it may require some face-to-face time when you actually take your exams and whatnot. But I think this is, the train's left the station. I think it's not a matter of should this happen, but it is happening, and how can we do it effectively and measure its effectiveness?
Former Education Secretary Veronica Garcia, now head of the New Mexico Voices for Children Advocacy Group, on At Noon from KSFR News. 12:21 coming up in 12:22 now. New treatment in the early stages of research at UNM may have the potential to reduce significantly the damage done by some common devastating health problems. KSFR's Charles Maynard has more on that story.
Heart attacks and strokes are still among the leading causes of death and disability in the United States. A new therapy being studied at the University of New Mexico Medical Center may be able to significantly lower the amount of tissue damage done by those disease processes. Dr. Jennifer Gillette is an assistant professor in the UNM Medical School Department of Pathology and is spearheading the study.
The grant is about, as you said, stem cells, and these are specific stem cells, hematopoietic stem cells, and what that means is they are the stem cells that give rise to the blood cells in your body, or also the immune cells. And what we're hoping to do is use these cells to as a therapy for heart attack patients. That's the ultimate goal. And what we're thinking is these are cells, these hematopoietic stem cells, can be targeted to the heart when it's under a wound and serve to help repair it. Most likely, I guess at least right now, we're thinking it would be once you're diagnosed with a heart attack, in the ER, something like that, it would be something that could be helped with a therapy after the fact. Because what we're thinking is that these are cells, once they're recruited to the heart, they can help to signal to the environment within the heart to help vascularize and help reduce the scarring that occurs during heart attack. The interesting thing that we think is going on is that when these stem cells can migrate to the heart, what they do is they can send signals to the damaged environment in the heart, which allows for it to try to repair itself by vascularizing or bringing in more blood vessels, which sort of helps prevent the blockage that occurs when a heart attack occurs and scar tissue that forms over time, to try to get around that by bringing in more blood vessels.
The stem cells in question are precursors of blood cells.
So these specific blood stem cells primarily reside in the bone marrow. However, throughout the day or anywhere, they're actually also can be found circulating throughout the blood. So while they predominantly live in the bone marrow, they can be released into the blood. They're surveying the situation and moving in and out. But then what we found is that during a heart attack, these cells can actually be mobilized or released from their bone marrow and actually targeted or migrated to the heart. Obviously, it's nicer to be able to use your own stem cells, but you could potentially use a donor, but in this case, it would probably be much more ideal to use the patient's own stem cells, because then you wouldn't have to deal with any rejection or of any sort.
Current research on these cells at other facilities has been promising.
There are some studies that are ongoing right now. The few studies that I'm aware of, don't know if there are any in the country, but there are definitely some studies that are ongoing trying to see if this could possibly be a therapeutic potential of the stem cells.
Dr. Gillette says the stem cells are not difficult to get and use for various conditions.
And these are stem cells that are already used in the clinic. They're used, for example, for leukemia patients and things like that. When you get a bone marrow transplant, we don't do that as much anymore. Now you get a stem cell transplant. So these are already effective cells used in the clinic. So I think that makes it a little shorter-term possibility.
Hopefully, should the therapy be available commercially, it won't be too expensive.
It's not that expensive, considering to mobilize stem cells and to isolate them. Right now, the drug treatments that you have to go on to be able to isolate the stem cells, they're not super expensive, although I know that there's work going on here actually at the UNM Cancer Center trying to come up with even more cost-effective ways to isolate out the stem cells.
Dr. Jennifer Gillette with the UNM Medical School.
There's outstanding work going on at the University of New Mexico's Cancer Center, and I'm happy to be a part of it. And people should really be proud of their state and the fact that they have such a high-profile cancer center and the work that's going on here.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
Hundreds of years of rule by Spain and then by Mexico have made New Mexico a place of many questions. Among the biggest is the question of ages-old land grants and whether current laws can recognize all laws and treaties, leaving open the question of whether land grants from Mexico and Spain should be recognized by the U.S. The question came up most recently in the late 1960s, when an itinerant preacher took up the land grant cause in Tierra Amarilla County. The local authorities tried to prevent Reyes Lopez Tijerina from rallying a group of local residents over the issue, and in retaliation, Tijerina organized an armed raid on the Tierra Amarilla County Courthouse to capture the district attorney who made that decision. It failed, and Tijerina went to jail for several years. There are those who say the armed raid shouldn't be the only legacy left by him. They say he did a lot of good work for New Mexico. In that group is Carmen Quintana, who says she's carried on some of his work, much of his important work, and I asked her to tell us about the man.
He did so much good. I noticed all the Northern New Mexico papers have a lot of good letters that have been inspired all by Reyes and his work with all the land grants and the water rights. And right now we're at a critical stage with preserving our water. We realize that some of our local governments are not necessarily working with the people that they should be working with.
Tell us what type of work and legacy he passed on to you.
Well, you know, one thing that people don't seem to realize is that the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo concerns all New Mexicans, not just the Indian tribes. And here in Santa Fe, I personally think that we should have smaller water systems instead of larger like the county has planned for us. I don't believe the city and the county governments have our best interests at heart. And so it's going to take a lot of people and a lot of information to realize how the land grants can go back to a sustainable way of living.
And what was he trying to do at the time?
He wanted to have a peaceful takeover of the land grants. It's always been involved in peace. Reyes was a minister. He doesn't believe in violence. And I think that newspapers, because they have to sell newspapers, concentrated on the violent takeover or attempted takeover of the raid. But I think we should peacefully get together and find ways to make a larger stand on taking over a lot of the land in New Mexico. We can do it. I have great faith in the people of New Mexico.
Was Reyes ever able to get back any of the land in question? And are his efforts more effective today than when he made the raid?
It's much more effective today because we have young writers like Michael Scarborough and David Correa writing stories about peaceful ways of learning about our land grants. And I personally teach people how to organize land grants. I've been working at this for 30 years, and this is the first time that we've ever been successful at getting a school like La Tierra to sponsor us. It's a Maria Montessori school that Roger Montoya started. He was the co-founder. I don't know the other founder's name, but I know I've been working with Roger. And the work that they've done on Los Luceros is just a beautiful, beautiful place and a way to show off what the young people are learning to do. And I think we're going to have an impact on our whole educational system because children need to learn with pride their culture and their history. And I think this is a way of showing people how it can be done. I think that school is an excellent way to show other schools how prideful we can be of our New Mexico culture.
Reyes Tijerina is from Mexico. Was there any resistance from indigenous Indian and Hispanic groups here to what he was trying to do?
There was a lot of resistance. I think many of the older Hispanic families who pride themselves on being pure Hispanic had a lot of resistance. I've written a book on that. It's called Family Denial. Someone asked me, how did you find out you were part Indian, Carmen? And I tell them, I looked in the mirror. And we have to learn that the Pueblo Indians have always had their right to their own water systems. And this is a time for us to choose whether we want larger water systems or smaller water systems. And I prefer smaller ones. There are many reasons that I could give why I prefer smaller water systems, but maintenance is one of them. And we have to start being more practical about our water usage.
Carmen Quintana, and there'll be an event remembering that courthouse raid and the land grant question. This Wednesday, it'll be at the Los Luceros Historical Ranch in El Calde. 75 degrees right now in Santa Fe. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones trying to regain some of last week's losses. It's up 54 points at 15,169. Following the tornadoes in Oklahoma, weather systems have sent big winds and torrential downpours to New England. At one point, 40,000 people in New England were without electricity. It really hits Vermont, Maine, and New Hampshire before going out to sea. Speaking of going out to sea, we've reserved an extra 60 seconds for the old curmudgeon.
A car slid through a stop sign and pulled in front of me. I honked at the driver, who predictably flipped me off. I ashamedly admit, accepted the young man's challenge to verbally joust, tossing the infamous F-bomb at each other. Before I tell you what happened next, let me describe the driver. A young Anglo male. At a glance, his carefully trimmed facial hair, pork pie, or small-brimmed hat, he projected the carefully groomed image of what he interpreted a modern hipster would look like, the kind of guy who would read poems by Charles Bukowski to his girl or boyfriend, with only Bukowski knowing what the poems meant. I barked at this perversion of the history of beat. "You ran a stop sign," to which he shot back with all the passion his poetic heart could muster. "So? You aren't a traffic cop." A retort to reside with the greats. Gonna take me a few months to get over that witty repartee. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.